Some actually came to Juneau to talk to me, to ask me, please, please, put one issue for the operating budget on the call.
Lawmakers gavel out of the first special session, and the governor orders them back for a second. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, June 16th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, working to understand the struggle for refugees through a simulated camp.
It's a registration form for you. Oh. You just can go ahead and fill it out.
I don't read this language.
I just do the best you can.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Early Honors Program at Alaska Pacific University delivers an experiential, individualized, and transformational education to high school seniors across Alaska. Find out more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
A breakdown in negotiations between House and Senate legislators yesterday resulted in lawmakers not passing a state operating budget in the first special session that ended this morning. So Governor Bill Walker today immediately called them in for a second special session, but is limiting the agenda to only the operating budget. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
There were 8 items on the first special session. The full legislature only passed the budget for mental health before both chambers adjourned. Governor Bill Walker says he is asking the legislature to take these items in a more measured way, starting with only the operating budget.
I received a lot of input from around the state from businesses, from business people. Some actually came to Juneau to talk to me, to ask me, please, please, put one issue for the operating budget on the call.
Walker says his priority is to stop a state government shutdown, which will occur on July 1st if there's no budget. He says it's important not just to prevent pink slips to government workers, but to prevent harm to private industries that depend on public services.
Now, commercial fishing is an example. They spend a lot of money getting ready for the season. And someone said to me, they said, obviously who hadn't commercial fish, said, well, if they lose 10 days, what's the problem? That might be the 10 days that the fish are there. And so any day, any minute that's lost during commercial season is very, very critical.
The second special session began shortly after 1 p.m. Friday, after the Senate adjourned the first special session. The Senate adjourned after budget negotiations broke down and the House combined the operating and capital budgets in a move condemned by the Senate majority and House minority. Dillingham Democratic House Speaker Bryce Edgman says it's important that the legislature not only passes a budget, but also passes a plan that brings how much the state spends in line with the money the government brings in. He says he doesn't want to fight the same battle next year.
Look into the calendar year 2018 and an election year, a political environment that's going to be much more complicated than it is this year. You sort of put all those factors together and, you go, why wouldn't we take decisive action now?
Senate leaders expressed frustration that the House didn't negotiate through Friday and instead passed a combined budget Thursday night. They knew the Senate wouldn't pass. But Senate Finance Co-Chairman Lyman Hoffman, a Bethel Democrat, says there's time to avoid a shutdown.
Let's focus on the people of Alaska instead of trying to get other items onto the agenda that are not on the agenda. Let's close this down and let's get the people's business done.
But the divisions and animosity run deep. House members accuse the Senate of not negotiating. In particular, Homer Republican Representative Paul Seaton says the House offered a 1.5% flat tax on employment and self-employment income. This was less than half the size of the original tax the House passed, but the Senate rejected it. Walker says he still wants the legislature to consider other issues after it passes an operating budget. Those include the capital budget and a long-term budget plan, as well as a new source of revenue like a broad-based tax. And Walker expressed disappointment the legislature didn't agree on a bill intended to reduce opioid overdose deaths after both chambers passed different versions of the bill. These items could be added to the special session later or addressed in a future special session. Walker says he also wants a budget for capital projects passed within a month, as soon as July 1st as possible. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Senator Lisa Murkowski is the target of a new TV ad urging her to vote against Republican efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act.
Senator Murkowski, you have a deciding vote. Alaskans need you to vote no on health care repeal.
The ad is paid for by Save My Care, a national health care advocacy group trying to stop Congress from repealing President Obama's health care law. Murkowski is a swing vote on health care. She criticizes current law for driving up premiums in Alaska, but she wants to keep some of its provisions, like coverage for pre-existing conditions, expanded Medicaid, and funding for Planned Parenthood. She said this week she doesn't know how she'll vote because she hasn't seen any text of the bill her colleagues are working on.
But, I mean, we don't know. I don't know.
She says she learns what might be in the bill from the questions reporters ask. She is critical of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's decision to bypass committees, but her dissatisfaction with the process doesn't mean she'll reject the repeal bill.
I can't speculate as to how I'm going to vote on something if I have no idea as to its contents.
The Senate is reportedly trying to soften some of the effects of the bill the House passed last month. That legislation would slash the generous subsidies that help middle-income Alaskans buy insurance plans. It would phase out funding for Medicaid expansion, a provision that has extended government-funded insurance to 34,000 lower-income Alaskans. The House bill would also lower taxes for people making more than $200,000 per year and reduce the federal deficit by $119 billion over 10 years. Each of the world's 21 million refugees has a unique story, but sometimes it's hard to see past the numbers. Catholic Social Services in Anchorage this week set up a simulation where people role-played arriving at a refugee camp. It was to help people try to get a sense of what it's like to flee your home with practically nothing. Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman was there.
When Annie Dierthick arrives at the simulation, tents are set up randomly around an open asphalt play area. Some are labeled in English, others aren't. At the entrance sits a pile of household items, clothes, blankets, pots and pans. Like people fleeing their homes, Dierthick quickly has to decide what to take with her.
Oh my gosh, what do I need? What do I need? I need shoes. I'll take some shoes with me.
She shoves random items into a pillowcase, then tries to figure out what to do next. She's pretending to be an 18-year-old who is fleeing forced army service in Eritrea, a small country in northeast Africa. She's given a sheet of paper that describes her situation.
I don't have a lot of options because crossing into Ethiopia is illegal and I will be persecuted. I can't go back home because I would be deemed a deserter.
So she goes to a camp that's close enough to the border that it could be hit by mortar shells. Her next stop is the registration tent, where she receives her food ration card.
There's a registration form for you. Oh. You just can go ahead and fill it out.
I don't read this language.
I just do the best you can.
It's a common problem in the camps. Refugees sometimes only know local languages, which aren't used for camp communications, and foreign aid workers can't always translate. Annie encounters the problem again at the medical tent and the food distribution tent. Eventually, she gets a small bag of uncooked rice from an aid worker.
I didn't bring anything to cook food with me.
Oh, that is unfortunate. So if people aren't able to bring their own pots and pans when they flee, they have to acquire them either from aid systems.
Several days, and all I have is dry rice.
That's too bad.
As Dierthick goes through the simulation, she has to give away her toothbrush to get help carrying water. Her few remaining possessions are stolen by a corrupt aid worker. And she has to find strangers who will let her live with them because the UN Refugee Agency won't provide tarps and tent poles to single individuals. Her new friends struggle to construct a small shelter without any instructions, and Dierthick can't help. In the simulation, her arm is badly infected, but the volunteer doctor won't arrive for at least a month. Jessica Kovarik is the director of Refugee Assistance and Immigration Services. She says people have lots of misconceptions about refugee camps, but conditions vary widely. Some are meant to be temporary, but others, like Dadaab in northern Kenya, have housed Somali refugees for 25 years. Part of it resembles a small permanent town. Kovarik says 60% of refugees aren't in camps. They've moved to urban areas of neighboring countries and have resettled there.
So a lot of people have in their heads this misperception that the majority of refugees are in Europe or they're coming to countries like the United States, and that's not true. The majority of refugees are hosted by lower economically developed countries, countries that are already resource poor and are having challenges with the people who are there currently.
UNHCR reports that fewer than 1% of refugees are resettled by the UN in countries like the US or Canada. Dirthik says she knows a lot about refugees. She's worked with many as a behavioral health clinician. But the simulation still surprised her. She didn't expect the different languages or people saying they wouldn't help.
From a behavioral health perspective, it's, I think, evidence of the resiliency that people have, that even in such a chaotic and disheartening and discouraging environment, that they can still kind of figure out how to get their basic needs met and get themselves resettled. It's really quite impressive.
There are more than 65 million people who have been forcibly displaced worldwide. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Urban Fish, an annual salmon derby near downtown Anchorage.
Could be, you know, right up there with one of the best king salmon fisheries in South Central Alaska.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The National Park Service says a climber has died on Denali. The name, gender, and nationality of the climber were not immediately released pending notification of the climber's family. The Park Service received a request for help at about 1 a.m. this morning from a party at the 17,500-foot level. The group was descending from Denali Pass when one person collapsed due to unknown illness. Two Park Service mountaineering volunteers reached the party and found the stricken climber unresponsive. Despite emergency interventions, the climber did not regain consciousness and was pronounced dead. Park Service says the climber's body will be recovered from a camp at 17,200 feet as weather conditions allow. Former Fairbanks District Attorney Mike Gray was killed in a motorcycle accident in the Yukon Territory. A Yukon Coroner's Office report says the 64-year-old Gray was headed toward Teslin on the Alaska Highway on Sunday when he lost control of his motorcycle on a gravel edge of the road while traveling through a construction zone. Gray, who began his law career in rural Virginia, most recently served as the district attorney for Bethel and had spent the previous 20 years as a DA in Fairbanks and Kodiak. The Fairbanks North Star Borough toughened its air regulations and issued more than 170 air quality violations. Earlier this spring, the EPA redesignated much of the borough as a serious non-attainment area for fine particulate pollution. As KUAC's Robert Hannon reports, the borough's violation letters resulted in only one citation.
In March, the borough passed tougher air quality measures that reduced the number of burn stages and increased fines. It also stepped up monitoring and following up on reports of violations. As a result, Nick Zarnicki with the borough's air quality division says more than 174 certified letters were issued to violators.
And then if a particular individual is found to violate multiple times within the winter, then it can move up to a citation. And last year, there was only one citation issued.
Zarnicki says Borough Mayor Carl Castle also regularly followed up certified letters with a personal phone call. That, says Glenn Miller, who directs air quality at the borough, is one reason for the high ratio of warnings to citation. Another reason, he says, is many violators are unaware of burn restrictions.
And then the third component of that is, you know, we have only two people that are dedicated for complaint response, and they can't be everywhere at once.
Miller says while there are probably violators out there that escape detection, he believes most people want to do the right thing. Staffing levels and burrow tracking are sure to be topics as the Assembly takes up another air quality ordinance at its meeting June 19th. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
Anchorage High School students will get a chance to learn about the work African American soldiers did 75 years ago to help build the Alaska Highway. The retired educator who led the effort says it's important that Alaska students learn about this little-known chapter in their state's history. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Jean Pollard is a retired school teacher who still proudly calls herself an educator. So when she learned some 7 years ago that more than 3,000 African American soldiers had helped build the Alaska Highway during World War II, she wondered why she didn't learn about that little-known chapter in state history when she was a student attending Anchorage schools.
Well, I never heard this before, and I graduated from high school here and took Alaska Studies, you know.
Pollard says she, like most Alaskan students, learned about the U.S. Army building the highway in 1942 to help defend the state from invasion by Japan. But until she saw a television documentary about the history of the highway, she didn't know that more than a third of the 11,000-some soldiers who built it were black, serving in poorly equipped segregated units. And neither did many of her fellow educators.
As I mentioned to some social studies teachers, nobody knew what I was talking about.
So she contacted Lael Morgan, an Alaskan journalist and writer who was interviewed for the TV documentary. Pollard asked Morgan to help her research the subject and develop lessons to help Alaskan students learn about black soldiers' crucial role in the highway project.
I said, well, I'm an educator. I'm feisty. We are born to educate, so we've got to get this story out.
Morgan is a writer and former University of Alaska Fairbanks Associate Professor of Journalism who's written extensively about the subject. She says when she began researching it in the years leading up to the 50th anniversary of the Alaska Highway in 1992, she quickly learned there wasn't much information available about it.
They had literally been written out of history.
Morgan says more research has been done on the subject since the 50th anniversary, but after talking with Pollard in 2011, she realized public awareness of it had again faded.
And Jean said, well, the only way to solve that problem is to get it in the school system.
So in 2012, she and a few others founded an organization they call the Alaska Highway Project, which Pollard now chairs. Their goals included collecting and sharing the black soldiers' stories, building a memorial to their service, and developing a curriculum that would give Alaskan students an opportunity to learn about the soldiers' work on the highway.
I missed that opportunity, and all the rest of us missed that opportunity. And I said, oh, no, we can't. You know, this generation coming up, they need to know this.
In 2013, Pollard and Morgan talked with Pam Orme, the Anchorage School District's social studies coordinator, about developing lessons on the subject that could be incorporated into history classes.
We looked at the curriculum that's required, and we saw that it fit absolutely perfectly in a unit focused on Jim Crow in Alaska.
So-called Jim Crow laws were instituted throughout the United States in the years after Civil War Reconstruction to maintain segregation and second-class citizen status for African Americans. Morgan says the black soldiers who worked on the highway helped end segregation in the military and American society through respect they earned by their hard work on the project.
After the Alcan building, our troops were sent all around to battlefields around the world, and they acquitted themselves very, very well.
Governor Bill Walker called the Alaska Highway the road to civil rights in comments he made April 30th after signing legislation that sets an annual observance of black soldiers' work on the project. Pollard and Morgan testified in favor of the measure and advocated for its passage. Meanwhile, the Alaska Highway Project has recruited sculptors who've designed a memorial organizers hope to erect next year in Anchorage's Centennial Park. And last month, Pollard and Morgan joined Orme and a group of 30 other educators in an Anchorage school district workshop to develop a curriculum about the black soldiers' service. Orme says Anchorage schools will begin using those lessons this fall, and she says they'll share them with other districts statewide. Fairbanks North Star Borough School District officials say they're interested. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska Southeast offers the Finnish College Alaska initiative designed with flexible online learning options and customized degree programs. It's college that fits life, work, and play schedules while earning a degree. UAS is now offering a 3-credit tuition waiver for eligible applicants. Apply for the fall semester by Tuesday, August the 1st. Learn more at finnishcollege.alaska.edu. This message is sponsored by UAS.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Slammin' for a Cause. Anchorage's annual Slammin' Salmon Derby is in full swing this week. Since last Friday, fishermen at Ship Creek have been competing to see who can hook the biggest king salmon. Alaska Public Media's Henry Leisha has more.
Down by the Ulu factory in Anchorage, men and women slip on rubber boots, unpack their fishing tackle, and begin to fill the marshy banks of Ship Creek. It's the annual Slammin' Salmon Derby, and everybody is trying to land a big one. Tucked between downtown and the industrial port of Anchorage, Ship Creek is the world's only urban king salmon fishery. It's a place where pencil pushers can catch a 20-pound salmon on their lunch break and be back in time for their afternoon meeting. Proceeds from the derby will go to the Downtown Hope Center, an organization that offers food, shelter, and other services to underserved members of the community. Volunteer Mike Hidalgo says he helps out at the Derby every year because he values the work that the center does.
It's been very successful in a sense that some of the folks that were homeless are now employed, and they're learning skills, baking and cooking, right there at the new facility we have.
Across the creek from the Ulu factory is a red shack where fishermen can buy bait and tackle and rent equipment. Outside, some muddy rubber boots are being hosed down on a plastic table. Inside, Dustin Slinker watches the creek from the window.
Yeah, you see the, oh, he just lost it.
Before Slinker opened the bait shack in 2011, the building had been boarded up. Running a bait and tackle shop had been a dream of his ever since he was a kid, so when he saw the space, he took the opportunity to make it happen. He says Ship Creek has become a very popular destination in recent years.
You know, the way it's been fishing in the last 3 years, 4 years, you know, could be, you know, right up there with one of the best king salmon fisheries in South Central Alaska, is also helping draw a lot of anglers with a lot of restrictions elsewhere, or sizes of fish, kings that you can't keep out of certain drainages, is really what's driving this, and the quality of the fish that we're getting back. We're getting bigger fish each year.
Down by the creek, Jared Fletcher and Bobby D have been fishing for hours. Fletcher has taken the day off, and Bobby D is taking some time to recover from an injury. So far, they haven't had any luck. They say the most important thing to remember when fishing Ship Creek is to make sure you have a good line.
So if you go through all this fishing, and you're here for 3 hours, and you get a fish on, and you got bad line, you're really kind of wasting your time.
The guy right there, right.
The one with the camo on, same thing happened to him a few minutes ago. He was like, fish on.
That
fish gone.
Fish gone.
Henry Mitchell, a fisheries consultant, has had similar luck during the Derby. He lost a fish when somebody cast it over him, cutting his line. He says it can be tough to share a small stretch of creek with so many people.
There's a certain etiquette. You do run into situations where certain people don't know how to cast very well and cross your lines. And, you know, it gets frustrating sometimes when, you know, your own bait gets tangled up with other people's. But, you know, that's all part of living in an urban environment with a downtown urban fishery.
Sometimes the fishing can be more solitary. Up on a footbridge above the creek, a man with a long gray beard and a worn blue Alaska cap fishes on his own from his electric wheelchair. 97-year-old Lewis Palmer lives in the Anchorage Pioneer Home, an assisted living facility for seniors. He's been fishing this creek for 45 years.
I like to fish. I raised my family up here on fish and moose, and you kind of get used to having it around, and good kings and good silvers are, if you take care of them and wrap them and freeze them properly, you can have them year-round.
These days, Palmer helps put food on the table for the other residents at the nursing home. He says that if he catches a salmon, he'll bring it home, and the staff at the nursing home will help cook it up for the others. As the tide rolls out, the water level gets lower, and most fishermen start to pack up. A few stragglers wade out into the creek, flicking their rods in a last-ditch effort to hook the big one. The Derby ends at noon on Sunday. Currently, the weight to beat is 32.75 pounds. First prize will receive 200 ounces of Troy Silver. For AK, I'm Henry Leisha.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Albert Scott in Anchorage. Scott is a registered nurse with the Air Force who moved to Alaska from Georgia 2 years ago.
Hard to adjust because I arrived here in December and I was actually traveling from Tampa, Florida.
Wow.
Temperature difference was probably about 70 degrees. Temperature difference, you know, for just a few hours on the flight. And it was dark, and you know, I think at that time it was around winter solstice, so you know, it was only about 5.5 hours of daylight, and that was definitely a huge adjustment. So yeah, it took me several months to get used to here. Even though Alaska is, you know, part of the United States, it almost seems like you live in a, you know, overseas or in a different country. I guess the people here are a lot more laid back. They're not really as interested into fashion or a lot of material things. You know, it's just a lot of outdoor activities, slower pace. So that's the biggest difference. I was invited by a few coworkers when I first got here. What we did, we went out into a frozen lake, and for some reason, we walked to what seemed like to be the middle of it, which I was curious as to why we couldn't fish, you know, from the bank. They used some type of, I think, a dredger or some type of tool to, you know, cut a hole into the ice. I think it was a few feet thick, and then, you know, you kind of just fish like what you would do normally. You put a line in the water and you sit there. And the big difference is it's a lot colder. So, yeah, it was an experience.
Albert Scott lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Henry Leisha and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Ann Hillman and Henry Leisha in Anchorage, and Dan Bross, Robert Hannon, and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Job Corps Center offers training to young people 16 to 24 years old interested in completing their education or starting a career and who meet income eligibility. On-the-job experience is provided in all the training programs from office administration to water and wastewater treatment. Tweet hashtag CareersBeginHere to learn more. This message is sponsored by Alaska Job Corps Center, Chugach Education Services, Inc.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.